You know, sometimes one of the great gurus is on the circuit, and they come to Burlington or Oakville or Toronto, and you hear about it. And so along you go, full of anticipation, and you're thinking, oh, yes, Lord, this is going to be such a good evening. And, you know, all your friends have told you such great things about this person. They are so wise, and they have so much to teach. And it turns out to be a huge disappointment. Okay. And, you know, I've had that experience sometimes. There's scholars whose books I've read. And, you know, you sort of have this picture of this giant, I mean, immaculate, handsome, you know, articulate. And then you go along, and it's like a damp squib. But, you know, there's nothing that prepares us, if we listen correctly, for the shock of Ecclesiastes. And to grasp what is going on in Ecclesiastes, you need, as so often with Scripture, to defamiliarize yourself with it. And so I want us all here today to imagine ourselves as a group of believers. And we've heard that the speaker is in Toronto. And so we gather together to be taught by the speaker, who has the reputation of being very, very wise. So off we go together. We travel to Toronto on the QEW. The traffic is hell, but it's bound to be worth it. And we set out early, we arrive early, and we go over in our minds what this wise man might have to say to us tonight. And perhaps even as we sit in the audience, waiting for the speaker to be introduced, we say a quick prayer that what the speaker says will relate to our present struggles. And so finally, the chairperson gets up to introduce the speaker. And that's what we have in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 at verse 1. And as the chairperson goes towards the podium, we say to ourselves, at last, here we go. Notebook out, pen ready, deliver the wisdom. And so the chairperson says to us, I want to introduce you to the preacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now the ESV translates the Hebrew here as the preacher. But we are not sure exactly how to translate this word. The NIV translates it as the teacher. And in Hebrew, and I think you're going to have to learn a few Hebrew words during this series on Ecclesiastes, the word is Kohelet. Kohelet, which the ESV translates as the preacher. And some people think, and I'm one of them, that this is the nickname of the speaker rather than a word meaning preacher or teacher. But even if it is a nickname, it relates to this speaker's ability to gather together from all over the place and then to gather us, which he's done, and to teach us wisdom to God's people. Indeed, Ecclesiastes is one of three wisdom books in the Old Testament, the other two being Proverbs and Job. And you know, you will not understand Ecclesiastes without Proverbs. Proverbs is that indispensable background, and it's also, incidentally, the reason why we are so excited as a group to gather to hear this great Kohelet. And I encourage you to have a look, for example, at the introduction to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 6. The author there is so excited about wisdom that he just amasses, you know, thing after thing after thing, as he tries to alert us to the fact that there are few things in life as valuable as getting hold of wisdom. In chapter 2 and verse 4 of Proverbs, he compares wisdom to silver and hidden treasure. And you know, can you imagine if Gillian or Ray David were to tell us, you know, you didn't know, but on this property there's hidden a great treasure. You know, some of you would say, excuse me, Craig, out there to try and get hold of it. And see, wisdom is this tremendous thing. It's about how to negotiate life with all its challenges. It's about how to live out our humanity in the context of the broken, fallen world in which we find ourselves in all its fullness before God. Wisdom is about how to get it right amidst the challenges we face from day to day, at work, at home, in our relationships, as parents, when to speak, when not to speak, how to speak, how to handle difficult people, how to orient our lives so that we succeed in the very best sense of that word. And you know, if you go through Proverbs 1, 1 to 6, eventually you will land in Proverbs 1, verse 7. And then you will see that this is no ordinary wisdom. This is not the horoscope in the newspaper or another blog on the internet or another book from the self-help section of Chapters or Indigo, however helpful that book may be. But the reason why wisdom is like silver and great treasure is that it's not our wisdom, which is so limited, but it is wisdom emerging from the starting point and foundation of the fear of the Lord, the fear of Yahweh, our Redeemer, Creator God. That is the beginning, the starting point, and the foundation of wisdom. And so you know what wisdom offers us is the instructor's manual for the day-to-day issues that we struggle with in life. Now, brothers and sisters, can you see why we're so excited to hear Kohelet as the chairperson introduces him? You and I know, and we discover, if we don't know it pretty soon, that boy, do we need wisdom. And even as the chairperson is announcing Kohelet, your mind may be running through the issues in your life for which you could really do with some wise insight. Now, the rest of verse 1 tells us more about Kohelet the preacher. He is none other than Solomon, the son of David, King in Jerusalem. Electrifying silence as the speaker is announced. Scholars nowadays think that Ecclesiastes was probably not actually written by Solomon. And I don't want to get into a big fight about that. You can talk to me afterwards if you want to. But either way, the point of this verse 1 is that we are to think of Kohelet as a Solomon-like figure. And so the chairperson, as he introduces Kohelet, he says to you, quite rightly, I don't need to tell you his CV because you all know it already. Do you? I suspect we do. If you don't, go and read 1 Kings chapters 1 to 11. There you will see Solomon's CV, his curriculum vitae. He is son of David by Bathsheba. He is made king by David. He's very religious. He offers sacrifices. And once when he goes to offer sacrifices at Gibeon, Yahweh appears to him. This is someone with intimate knowledge of Yahweh, the Redeemer, Creator God. And Yahweh offers to give him whatever he wants. And what does he ask for? Discernment in administering justice. He asks for wisdom. And God gives him wisdom, and he becomes renowned internationally. So great ones come from all over to sit at his feet and to hear his wisdom. We also know that he's the one who built the temple and dedicated it, of course. And you need to go and have a look at 1 Kings 1 to 11. if you look closely and read between the lines, there's some less savory aspects to his CV. But tonight we're not worried about this. We just can't wait. Give it to us, Solomon. We need wisdom. And so, as Kohelet rises to the podium, we wait with a deep sense of awe and expectation. Are you with me? Nothing, absolutely nothing, prepares us for chapter 1, verses 2 to 3, in which this great, wise one sets out the theme of his book. Nothing prepares you for this. So Solomon rises to the podium. There's silence in the room. We can't wait for the pearls of wisdom because we need them so badly. He announces the theme that will dominate the whole of his talk. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Wow. Okay, did we come to the right lecture? Do you see? You see, you've got to defamiliarize yourself. I mean, this would have, if you were a group of Hebrews in the Old Testament, and you'd never heard this book before, I mean, you would just about be in a heap. The adrenaline would be rushing. You know, what happened? How is this possible? And you know, if you, just so that you make sure that I'm right with this, and you need to immerse yourself in Ecclesiastes over these weeks, often in Scripture, if they want to tell us what the main theme of something is, the theme comes at the beginning and at the end of a section. The nice words for this are bookends, okay? Some people refer to it as the envelope structure that holds it round and says, here I am, I'm the main theme. Okay, if you really want to be fancy, and you ought to want to be fancy because we're part of this church, St. George's, this great church, it's what biblical scholars call an inclusion. And if you have a look, I won't go there now, at chapter 1, verse 2, and chapter 12, verse 8, you will find the bookends. It's repeated exactly so that we're quite sure this is indeed the main theme of what Kohelet is talking about. Now, you know, as with Kohelet's name, and I hope you're going to remember Kohelet. Okay, if you want to remember the preacher or the teacher, that's also fine. We're just not exactly sure what this name means. But as with Kohelet's name, it's not at all clear initially what he means by these words. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity. The NIV translates this, meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. And the Good News Bible, I'm not very partial to this translation, useless, useless, all is useless. And then there are a gazillion other ones, some of which I couldn't mention from the pulpit. Now, the word here, can I teach you another Hebrew word? Ray David will test you next week, Kohelet. The word here is the Hebrew word hevel. Okay, H-E-V-E-L. And it literally means vapor, like steam, vapor. So literally what Solomon is saying to us here is vapor of vapors, everything is vapor. But clearly vapor is here a metaphor. And so, you know, it doesn't get us too far in saying, well, everything is like vapor. Maybe it does. But what exactly does it mean? And I think verse 3 and the poem that follow help us here. Verse 3 is a question that recurs throughout the book. And one of the things that you will have to become familiar with in Ecclesiastes is repetition. You know, you'll be aware by now that this great wise one has got himself into a very, very bad place. And what happens when you get into that place is that you don't come out of it quickly. You tend to circle round and round and round. And if ever you are in that position or you meet people who are in that position, they will drive you nuts. Because they want to talk about it again and again, but it's because the struggle is so intense. But look at verse 3 of chapter 1. This helps us to understand what hevel is all about, this vanity, this meaningless. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? See, this is it goes from a sort of fairly abstract thing, vapor of vapors or vanity of vanities, to a very concrete existential question. And it's framed in terms of work. And Solomon, Kohelet, as it were, says to us, you know, I mean, what is it all about? Humans work so hard. And you know, here in Burlington, we are in what people call the stress triangle of Canada. And I live in Hamilton, but I don't know how people do it, getting up early, driving day in and day out to Toronto on the QEW, bumper to bumper, week in, week out, through those dark, cold winter mornings and back in the evening. So much stress, so much struggle. But Kohelet says, for what? And you know, I'm sure you're familiar with rhetorical questions. A rhetorical question, which I often use from the pulpit, is one that is designed to make someone think, but the answer is implied in the question. And the implication of this question here, most remarkably, is that there is no value at all in all the work we do. What is the value? It just seems empty and meaningless and a waste of time. Now, you see this, too, in the poem in verses 4 to 11. Have a look at this poem. I don't have time in this sermon to examine it in any detail. But, you know, as Kohelet observes life, he says it just seems to repeat itself again and again and again. There never seems to be any progress. And, you know, I don't know, you know, one thing that you need to do with Ecclesiastes, I mean, you need to watch it, because to get into this position can be one of very, very, very deep despair. But you do need to enter into the struggle. I don't know if it's ever struck you that, as Kohelet says, a generation comes and a generation goes, but the earth remains forever. Have you ever thought about the fact that we are born, we are die? Most of us will never be remembered. Then another generation comes on, and they make a mess of it again. And then and they go, they are forgotten, and another generation. It's this kind of circularity. The river flows into the ocean, but it's never full. And then it flows out again. Round and round and round it goes. Now, just to cut to the chase, at the heart, if you analyze this poem that you find in verse 4 through to 11, there is a center to this poem. And I can't elaborate on that too much, but you'll have to trust me, at least in my view in the Hebrew, there's a center to the poem which tells us what the heart of the poem is about. And that is in verse 8. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. Life just seems to go round and round. We work so hard, but for what? We seem to be locked into this endless cycle with nothing new ever happening. Now, clearly, our speaker is in a bad place. Okay. Whereas once he thought he understood life, and he achieved this reputation of extraordinary wisdom, now everything And you will see as we go through Ecclesiastes, everything comes before him like a huge question mark. In my own view, it is not that he denies that life has meaning, but the hell of the situation he's got himself into is that if life has meaning, try as he may, he can't find it. Okay, so it'd be one thing to decide life is meaningless. Well, then you just get on with it, or commit suicide, or do whatever you have to do. Nowadays, we just get on with it and have fun. But it's another thing to know that life may be meaningful. But no matter what you do, you've got yourself into a position where you simply cannot find out. And that is why I propose that instead of the word vanity, you might want to think of the word enigma. Okay? So, you know, vanity is an old word. I don't think it's a very helpful word in a contemporary translation. But it's very difficult to know how to translate this word hevel. And so what I would suggest to you is that Qohelet, this incredibly wise person, has somehow moved from a position of stability and feeling that he knows what is going on in the world to a position where no matter what area of life he looks at, it approaches him as a huge question mark. And he cannot get his way out of this. Everything in his life is utterly enigmatic. It presents itself like a great mystery. Now, do you see now why nothing prepared us for this opening salvo from Qohelet? There, we traveled a long way. We paid to come and hear him lecture. We arrived early, and this is what we get. Oh, you say, what a mess. It is a mess. That's why I love Ecclesiastes. Because, you know, one of the wonderful things about the Bible is that it is very, very realistic. It connects with the real experience of real people. You know, we are never told, and we have no idea, how Qohelet found himself in this situation. Strange, eh? With Job, we know what went wrong. With Qohelet, we do not. And my hunch is that Qohelet himself did not know how he had ended up in this agonizing struggle over whether or not life is meaningful. And you know, there's lots to be learned from this. You can be going along just fine in life, and then one day you wake up, as has happened to people like Tolstoy and many others, and suddenly, wherever you look, it's one big question mark. These things, suddenly, that you find yourself in the midst of the struggle. Of course, sometimes we can see very clearly how we got there. But you know what's so instructive about this book and why people love Ecclesiastes so much? It speaks so much to the zeitgeist of our age. But you need to remember, this is not the unbeliever that's being portrayed here. This is the believer. This is someone who's powerful, who's wise, who's particularly gifted with wisdom. And he has found himself into a situation where no matter what he looks at, everything seems enigmatic. We are invited to feel his desperation. And we are invited to see where he made mistakes and how resolution eventually comes. Now, you know, Qohelet didn't go quietly. And you shouldn't, really, when you find yourself in this situation. He also had enormous resources at hand. And if you have a look, and hopefully next week this can be focused on in more detail, in chapter 1, verse 12 to 18, you'll find that Qohelet embarked on a research project. He said, enough. I'm king, I've got enormous wealth, I'm very wise. I am now going to systematically examine every area of life to try and resolve this terrible dilemma in which I found myself. And that's what will unfold as we journey with Qohelet through this book. It's not an easy book because life is often not easy. It goes over and over the same issues because that's what happens when you find yourself in this situation. Ultimately, lest you're totally depressed by now, there is good, indeed great news in this book. But it emerges at the end of a dark journey of what St. John of the Cross might have referred to as the dark night of the soul, as is often the case in our own lives. Amen.